All right, so we've got some really fascinating stuff to dig into today. Excerpts from a lecture series by Dr. Marv Wilson, and it's all about the prophet Isaiah. We're going to do a deep dive into his world, his words, and why he matters so much.
Especially to Christians.
Oh, yeah, especially to Christians. And get ready for some surprising insights.
Yeah, you know, when you first start looking into Isaiah, it's pretty striking how much his life and, you know, and the crazy times he lived in, how much that shaped his message.
Well, even his name, right?
Right.
It's like a hint, Yahweh saves. It's not exactly subtle.
Nope.
But what I find really interesting is that Isaiah might have been even more than just a prophet.
Oh, right.
Some scholars suggest he could have been a royal cousin.
That's right. There's this Jewish tradition that links Isaiah's father, Amoz, to the royal family. So that would make Isaiah possibly a relative of King Uzziah.
Wow.
It's not, you know, like concrete evidence or anything, but it's just an interesting layer to kind of think about when you're trying to understand his influence and perspective.
I mean, imagine being right there in the royal court and seeing how it all works.
Right.
It makes you wonder how that might have shaped his prophecies. And speaking of prophecies, he's often called the messianic prophet. But why, though?
Yeah.
What makes his message so significant in that regard?
I think it's not just that he talks about a future Messiah, but it's the depth and detail of his prophecies. You know, he describes a figure who will suffer for the sins of humanity. And that whole concept, you know, becomes so central to the Christian understanding of Jesus.
Right.
And passages like Isaiah 53 are incredibly powerful and have really resonated with Christians, you know, for centuries.
That's a great point. It's not just a general idea of a Messiah, but a very specific picture of what this Messiah would do and what they would endure.
Exactly.
But let's go back to Isaiah's own time for a second. Dr. Wilson mentions that he lived during the reigns of Kings Uzziah and Hezekiah, and that was a period of just major upheaval for Judah.
Absolutely. I mean, you have the Assyrian Empire looming, you've got internal political struggles, a growing sense of social injustice, and Isaiah is not afraid to address these issues head on. He calls out Judah's sins, he warns of God's judgment, but he also offers this powerful message of hope and restoration.
That's something that always strikes me about Isaiah, this constant interplay between judgment and hope. It's not all doom and gloom, is it?
No, not at all. And in fact, Isaiah's name itself points to that hope Yahweh saves. He constantly reminds the people that even in those darkest moments, God is with them, offering deliverance and promising a brighter future.
And that deliverance isn't just for Judah either, right? Isaiah speaks about this future messianic age, a time of peace and justice that extends to all nations.
Yeah, that's right. It's a vision that's inspired people for millennia.
It really has.
Isaiah's vision goes beyond national borders. He talks about swords being beaten into plowshares, the wolf lying down with the lamb. This universal vision of peace and harmony speaks to, you know, anyone who longs for a better world.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible how these ancient words still hold so much power today. But let's go back to Isaiah's life for a moment. Dr. Wilson mentions that there's this intriguing possibility that Isaiah was martyred, sawn in two, as it says in the book of Hebrews.
Wow, that's a powerful image.
It is.
It speaks to the risks that he might have faced, you know, speaking truth to power.
Yeah.
We can't say for certain how he died, but the possibility of martyrdom adds another layer to his legacy. It shows him as this courageous prophet who was willing to stand up for his beliefs even when he was in danger.
It really makes you think about the weight of his words, knowing the potential price he paid for delivering them.
Right.
Dr. Wilson also brings up some interesting details about Isaiah's family life. He had two sons with names that sound like they came straight out of a prophecy.
Oh, absolutely. Shir-Jashub, which means a remnant will return, and Mahur-Shalhash-Baz.
Whoa, wait, hold on, what?
Yeah, which translates to the spoil speeds the prey haste.
Okay, imagine trying to call Mahur-Shalhash-Baz in for dinner. Dinner's ready, the spoil speeds the prey haste.
I know, right?
That's amazing.
It's almost too perfect, like he was naming his children after like key themes in his own prophetic book.
Right.
But those names, they really do highlight those essential aspects of Isaiah's message, the promise of restoration for a faithful remnant, and the sweetness of God's judgment on those who just keep doing wrong.
Yeah, it's like those names were little walking prophecies.
Exactly.
And those prophecies, when you look at the book of Isaiah, they aren't just random and scattered about. Dr. Wilson talks about how the book is structured, and it's actually pretty fascinating.
Yeah, right. There's definitely a structure to it. The first section, chapters 1 through 39, focuses mostly on events that happened during Isaiah's lifetime. So he's speaking directly to the people of Judah, warning them about the consequences of their actions, but he always kind of weaves in that thread of hope.
So it's a snapshot of what was going on politically and spiritually in Judah at that time.
Exactly.
But then things kind of take a turn, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Wilson mentions Isaiah's apocalypse section.
Yeah, chapters 24 through 27 get pretty intense. That's where Isaiah shifts from talking to his immediate audience to focusing more on God's ultimate plan for humanity and the earth.
Okay, so apocalypse. When we hear that, we think like fire and brimstone.
Right.
But it's not necessarily about that, is it?
No, it's not necessarily about fire and brimstone. It's more about like a cosmic shakeup, a divine intervention that ultimately leads to, you know, good triumphing over evil and a renewed creation.
Okay, so more transformation than just pure destruction.
Right.
It's interesting because even back then, people were grappling with these huge questions about the end times. Dr. Wilson even mentions Isaiah's take on the resurrection of the dead.
Yeah, and this section of Isaiah offers some of the strongest evidence for the belief in resurrection in the Hebrew Bible. You know, it gives us this little window into how ancient Jewish thought dealt with ideas of life after death. It's clear that these weren't just like abstract concepts, but deeply held beliefs that shaped their understanding of God's plan.
Okay, so we've got judgment, we've got hope, we've got this apocalyptic vision. It's a lot to take in. What comes after that in the structure of the book?
Well, there's this kind of historical interlude. In chapters 36 through 39, we get a closer look at some of the key events in Isaiah's life, you know, his interactions with the kings, even his illness. And there's this fascinating account of envoys from Babylon coming to visit, which adds a very human element to the prophet's story.
It's like we're getting to see behind the curtain a little bit,
yeah.
Seeing the man behind the prophecies.
Right.
And then we get to the final section of the book.
Exactly. Chapters 40 through 66 shift gears again. And this time, the primary audience seems to be the Jewish exiles in Babylon. The message is one of comfort and hope, assuring them that even though they're suffering, God hasn't forgotten them. There's a strong emphasis on redemption and the ultimate victory of God's plan.
And this is where we find the famous Isaiah 53, right?
You got it.
The passage that so many Christians see as foreshadowing Jesus's suffering and sacrifice.
Absolutely. Isaiah 53 is a pivotal chapter, and it's had a profound impact on how Christians understand the mission and significance of Jesus.
It's amazing how these ancient words can speak across centuries and still resonate with people today. But Dr. Wilson throws in a bit of a curveball here. He mentions the Isaiah problem, this idea that the book might not have been written by just one Isaiah.
Ah, yes, the Isaiah problem. It's something that has fascinated biblical scholars for ages. You know, some argue that the book we have today is actually a collection of writings from multiple prophets composed over centuries. They point to shifts in style, vocabulary, and historical context as evidence.
So it's like a literary detective story.
It is.
Trying to piece together who wrote what and when.
Yeah.
I mean, how do scholars even approach a problem like that?
Well, they analyze things like the language that's used, the historical references, the theological themes. Some argue that the later chapters, especially those dealing with the exile, they seem to reflect a different historical and theological perspective than the earlier chapters. It's a complex issue, and there's not really an easy answer.
It makes you realize that even these ancient texts that we consider sacred have their own mysteries and layers of complexity.
Absolutely. And the debate itself is a testament to the enduring power and relevance of Isaiah. You know, it forces us to grapple with questions of authorship interpretation and how these texts have been shaped and understood over time.
You know, as we've gone deeper into Isaiah, I keep coming back to that tension between judgment and hope that we talked about earlier. Dr. Wilson also brings up this idea of a covenant lawsuit, which sounds pretty intense. What exactly does that mean? So it's like God's taking humanity to court.
Yeah, it's a powerful image, isn't it? Dr. Wilson explains that the idea of a covenant lawsuit, particularly like we see in Micah, you know, Micah was a prophet around the same time as Isaiah.
Okay.
And it's like God is presenting this case against his people. He's saying, look, you're not upholding your end of the bargain. You know, they're straying from justice and righteousness.
So it's not just about breaking the rules.
Right.
But about violating this deeper relationship.
Exactly. It's a sacred agreement.
Right.
And, you know, it's important to remember this covenant wasn't just some like random set of regulations.
Right.
It was about creating a society that was based on justice, compassion, and faithfulness to God. And the prophets like Isaiah and Micah, they were there to remind the people what that vision was all about, you know, to call them back to a right relationship with God and with each other.
It's like a reminder that our actions have consequences. Not just in some like spiritual sense,
right?
But in the real world.
Exactly. In our communities, in our world. And that's where Isaiah's message of hope becomes even more important.
Okay.
Dr. Wilson makes this really interesting connection between Isaiah's emphasis on God's deliverance and the Exodus story.
Oh, yeah.
He actually calls the Exodus the greatest miracle that God performed in the Hebrew Bible.
Wow.
And he highlights this pattern of God actively stepping in to rescue his people.
So even in the midst of judgment and all these consequences, there's still that underlying sense of grace and redemption.
Absolutely. And Isaiah takes this idea even further. He points toward an even greater deliverance in the Messianic age. He paints this picture of a future where God's reign of peace and justice is going to be fully realized, not just for like a select few, but for everyone, for all nations.
It's a vision that's given people hope, and it's fueled movements for social justice for centuries.
And it challenges us to do more than just sit back and watch. You know, Isaiah calls us to live out those principles of justice and mercy and humility in our own lives, to actually be agents of change in our community.
So it's like we're all part of this story.
Yes.
This struggle for a better world.
Right. We've talked a lot about the importance of a genuine relationship with God.
Yeah.
But Dr. Wilson also touches on this this idea of ritual, which can be kind of a touchy subject sometimes.
Yeah, ritual can be tricky.
It can. You know, it can become empty and meaningless if it's not coming from a sincere place in your heart.
Right.
But it can also be such a powerful tool for connecting with the divine, for reminding us about our commitments, and for grounding us in something bigger than ourselves.
It's like those rituals, when they're done with real intention and understanding,
yeah,
it's like they could be a physical way of showing our spiritual journey.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
They help us to make our faith tangible, to express gratitude, to seek guidance, and to connect with those traditions that have shaped our beliefs.
And even if we might not get certain rituals from different faiths,
yeah,
we can still appreciate the sincerity behind them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the role they play in people's lives.
It's about recognizing that shared human desire for connection, for meaning, for something that goes beyond our everyday lives.
It's something we can all relate to.
Exactly.
Regardless of our beliefs or practices.
Right. So we've covered a lot of ground today. You know, we've talked about Isaiah's life, his message, the structure of his book, even those debates about who actually wrote it.
And the Isaiah problem.
Yes.
Right.
We've explored the good and the bad, the judgment and the hope, the historical background, and what it means for us today. Isaiah might have been speaking to those people in ancient Judah, but his words, they still matter to us now. They challenge us to live with integrity, with compassion, and with that commitment to justice. He's inviting us to step into that space between what is and what could be, to embrace the struggle and to embrace the hope.
Yeah.
And maybe most importantly, he's reminding us that we're not alone in this. We have each other. We have all that wisdom from the past. And we have the promise of a God who's constantly working to redeem and restore his creation.
It's a lot to think about.
It is.
We've only just scratched the surface of this incredible book, but hopefully this deep dive has given you a good place to start your own exploration.
Yeah.
What does walking humbly with God look like for you? What can you do to bring Isaiah's vision of justice and mercy to your own little corner of the world? We encourage you to keep digging, keep asking questions, and keep discovering the power of these ancient words. You might be surprised by what you find.